Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs, so kind of up over there. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. The person next to you might be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Excuse me. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we're discussing step one, so we're right back at the start, and we're going to spend 2 weeks on step one. So tonight we're specifically talking about the allergy to alcohol that Alcoholics Anonymous states that we have. So I'm just going to go ahead and read the first paragraph, and then John and Ryan are going to share their experience, strength, and hope with that paragraph. So step one then, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So I'm going to go from, it's basically parts of the doctor's opinion that we're reading tonight. And depending on what edition of the book you have, these page numbers are from the fourth edition. If you've got one of those wee books, it might be different number, or if you have got a third edition, it could be different numbers too. Sorry. So anyway, XXVI, and it's the paragraph that starts the physician who. So I'll just go ahead and read it. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent, with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well, In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may of course mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And I'll turn the meeting over to Ryan.
Oh, I get to go first. Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
I always find it interesting that the first step doesn't tell me to admit that I'm an alcoholic. It tells me to admit that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable. And for me, powerlessness took two forms. And the first part of that was this craving I get whenever I drink alcohol. I remember when I was first presented with this idea, they told me about an allergy, and that just sounded too bizarre. I don't break out into hives, I don't itch, I don't walk around with an EpiPen. So it was it was very difficult for me to accept this, and a lot of people are big on like looking words up. So I did what they suggested, and it said an abnormal reaction to alcohol, and I could buy that. And the thing that really sticks out about me in this paragraph is these ideas that, you know, I'm maladjusted to life, full flight from reality, or an outright mental defective. I've always known there was something wrong with me. I mean, I remember just even as a little kid, like everybody else seemed to have these like skills and abilities that I just did not seem to possess. They could just like walk around and like be okay with life. They knew how to talk to people and interact with them. They just seemed to do okay. And I was never okay. I was always very awkward and pent up, and freaked out is a really good word to describe it. I have this amazing ability to say and do the wrong thing at exactly the right time, and it was just awesome walking around all the time like that, you know, and they just seemed to be able to like wake up in the morning and be fine, you know, and I just couldn't figure out how to do that. And I can point to like all kinds of messed up things that happened to me in my childhood that would explain why I'm an alcoholic, but that just doesn't hold water. And the reason is because I can find thousands upon thousands upon thousands of other people out there that have had messed up childhoods, or probably even more messed up than me, because they're never going to ask me to do like a Lifetime movie. Just wasn't that bad. And they didn't drink like I did. So what's the difference between me and them? You know, and that's where this idea of a physical allergy comes into play, that when I start to drink, I just want more, you know, and it does explain a lot of things that I cannot otherwise account for. I remember the first time I drank alcohol, I didn't get rip-roaring drunk. There's this guy, he bought me and my friend like a bottle of Boone's, and we drank that bottle of Boone's, and a short period afterwards we had an opportunity to drink more, and he said, how many did you want? And I said, more, you know. And I don't know how I knew that one bottle was not going to satisfy me, but I did. And that night we sat down and I drank the two that I had purchased, and my friend, because she's not an alcoholic, couldn't finish all of hers, so I was very gracious and helped her out with that. You know, but I can see it in other areas of my life. You know, there were certainly times when I set out to get drunk. Like, that was my purpose. I used to love it. I would wait, you know, pent up all work week, like, we're going out. This is going to be great. This is going to be wonderful. We're going to get drunk. We're going to blow off some steam. It's going to be wonderful. And I would go out and I would get drunk. And I wouldn't stop there. You know, why not? Why didn't I not stop? I got what I wanted. You know, I can't stand. The world is spinning. I'm puking my brains out. And yet, for some reason, I want another drink. Why? You know, because I crave more alcohol. When I start to drink, I cannot control how much I'm going to take. And the other big area I see that in my life is towards the end, my intention. I was tired of getting drunk. I was tired of the hangovers. I was tired of the consequences. So I sat down almost every time I drank with the intention of having two. You know, and I remember one instance, I went to the store and I bought like three or four bottles of wine, and it wasn't because I was going to drink it all that night, I swear. It's because I didn't want to go, like, make several trips to the store, like, over the next week. I'm going to, like, save it up. This will be good for 2 weeks, and we'll be good. And I sat down that night after a long, hard day with the intention of having two drinks, you know, and I took the first drink, and I took the second drink, and I didn't stop at those two drinks, you know. Next thing I know, every ounce of alcohol I can get my hand on is gone, you know, and I'm back at the store, you know, and that's that physical allergy, you know. And I like to compare it to like Coke, you know. I like Diet Coke. I've never sat down with the intention of having one Diet Coke and accidentally drank an entire 12 pack. You know, it just doesn't happen. And that's that allergy working in my life. And so this idea of an allergy, it does explains a lot. It's that thing that makes me different from every other drinker out, normal or heavy drinker out there.
All right. Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Really glad to be here. I started drinking in high school, just to give a little backdrop, and I loved it. It was fantastic. And, you know, in my mind, it was my choice to drink every drink I ever drank, and I had a lot of fun doing it. And it was always a party, no matter what we were doing. Any time I was out with my friends or whomever, I wanted to drink more because it was going to be more fun. Let's make it weird. Let's take shots. Let's sprinkle in some weed or anything. And really, I really honestly thought back, even on, you know, the morning after, hungover is all get out. You know, wouldn't it be cool to make a movie about what we did? Like, I envisioned, you know, some, like, we were all in a movie and there was music playing and it was all slow-mo and we were just setting the world on fire and it was just epic stories we were creating every single time. I really told myself that over and over again. So, you know, drinking was a lot of fun for me. It was a lot of fun. When I came to these rooms, it was, I didn't want to be here. This was never my goal, to arrive here in these rooms with all of you. I was pretty sure I knew exactly what you guys were all about. I knew what alcoholism was, and I didn't have it. But I needed to come here and figure out how to stop drinking. All those parties and those stories and movies I was creating in my head, those went away. And all those drinks that I thought I was choosing to take, I took a billion more than that I didn't want to, and I didn't understand it. And this allergy thing kind of made sense to me when I came in here. I came in here, I read the steps on the wall. Step one, got that, let's move on. But when we started reading and I started listening, that was important. The allergy thing made sense because those last 6-12 months, whatever it was, of my life, while I was drinking, I just could not stop. And I didn't want to drink, but I could not go to sleep without drinking. When I woke up in the morning, instantly I would go downstairs, light a cigarette, go outside, dry heave, and then before the family woke up, I would go get that hidden bottle of vodka and take a few nips just to get straight. And I didn't want to, but I had to. So this allergy thing, it started to make sense to me. What else could it be? I came here to learn how to stop drinking. I didn't understand any of this other stuff. And to be honest with you, when we read this stuff about being maladjusted and full flight from reality, mental defect, I didn't like that. I still don't like that. You know, I thought I had a drinking problem. And you're telling me in so many words that I'm kind of a psychopath, and I've always been that way. And that didn't sit well with me, but, you know, I was so broken down at this point, I had to listen. I had no other options. So what I did was I listened and identified with other alcoholics telling their stories, and really, the drunkologues are kind of what kept me engaged. Yeah, I drink like that. That's me. So the more I could identify in, the more I could understand or accept, begin to be willing to accept some of these things that we're reading. You know, the allergy thing, that made sense. The mental problems, which, you know, the longer I stayed in here, the more relevant those became. That's all.
Thanks, guys. Now we're going to read another paragraph, and this time it's from XXVIII, which is 28. XXVIII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
Yeah. You know, I had never stopped to consider what an average temperate drinker was. I don't know, it just never occurred to me. That's probably pretty normal. I guess most people don't. I was largely oblivious to how I was drinking. It was not something I paid attention to. I never paid attention to how often I drank or how much I drank. It was just kind of something I did. It was just like instinct is the best way I have to describe it. But when I got here and people started talking about the average temperate drinker, you know, that was kind of like a novel idea. Like, what does that look like? And they started talking about these people that they were like satisfied with like a couple of drinks. It's funny. I had two roommates when I was in my early 20s. Jackie, Debbie, and me. And Jackie's a average temperate drinker. Debbie's a heavy drinker, and I am the drunk. It was pretty interesting times. Jackie, she would buy like these 4-packs of Sutter Homes, you know, those little like one sitting wine bottles, and she would like come home from work sometimes and she would like have a couple of drinks off of it, and she would put the cap back on and she would put it back in the refrigerator, and that thing would sit there forever, and I don't know. Sometimes we would go out to the bar with some friends after work, and she liked apple martinis, and she would have like one of these apple martinis, and she would just be having a grand old time, like, woo, feeling it. And I'm just like looking at her going, I need a few more to feel like that. But apparently that's like the normal reaction to alcohol. You know, you get a little lightheaded, maybe you get a little drowsy. It's like, woo, I'm feeling it, I'm done. And I don't know, when I'm feeling that, I'm just getting started. I remember like trying to fit in with those guys after work. It was horrible, you know, because they were all a bunch of average drinkers, you know? And so I know that I can only have like one, maybe two, while I'm sitting there with them. And it was the most uncomfortable thing. They're like all talking and having a good time. And all I'm thinking is, are they gonna notice if I have one more drink? Maybe I can get away with three. You know, and just sitting there incredibly uncomfortable. And I actually pulled it off a few times, but what would started to happen is that I would go out with these people, and then I would go home, and I passed by a convenience store on the way home, so I would have my one or two drinks with those average tempered drinkers so that I can fit in and keep up the facade, and then I would buy a bunch of booze and go home and sit in my room and drink. And I always had to make it home before Jackie, because I do not want her to know that I'm drinking so much. But it was really weird to stop and consider that. I just didn't know that happened. And it says I can never safely use alcohol, which means that I have to stop. And that's where it's just not going to go well. And it took me a long time to see that I would not be able to control that. I mean, that was something that I suffered from over and over and over again for years. I was a person who desperately wanted to be able to drink and to be able to control it. At the end, it was pretty ugly, actually. I had lost a job, and I was too embarrassed to get a new one. And so I went back to school Because that's definitely the answer. And I would like make it through the day, and it would be about 2 or 3 o'clock, and school would be out, and I would go to the package store, that's what they called them in Texas, and I would buy like these fabulous little airplane bottles of booze and to like control it. And it was great because I always had this made up story in my head in case they ever asked me why I was buying so many airplane bottles every day, because I would only buy 2 or 3 at a time. And there was like this made up fantasy land where I'm like making gift baskets or something, I don't know. But I would like, I would buy those 2 or 3 little airplane bottles of vodka. I loved vodka. And I would make the 15-minute drive home, and they wouldn't last 15 minutes. And I would get home, and I just need a couple more to take the edge off before the husband gets home. And so I would quick stop at the store and buy me a couple of 32-ounce beers, because I don't want to spend a lot on booze, and they're really cheap. And I would get home, and I would drink that, and I got about 10 more minutes before he's supposed to get home. And what would happen is I would end up with all this booze hidden around my house, you know, because I'm craving more and more of it, you know, and that's what happens when I drink every time, pretty much. And I can't use it at all, you know. Whenever I drink, that's what happens. And then, of course, you know, the crazy stuff we can do when we drink happens. But this idea of losing my self-confidence, that's kind of a hopeless place to get to. And I always look at that as my ability to fix this problem. I really truly held on to this idea that I was going to be able to fix it and control it. I remember my husband coming in one day, and of course I had drank again, and he's like, "Ryan, you know, what do you want me to do? You know, what can I do to help you?" And I looked at him and I said, "There's nothing you can do. You're powerless." I said, "I just have to quit," you know, because I really thought that I would be able to control it. And I did lose that self-confidence. Eventually, I did realize I'm not going to be able to quit altogether or control it, and that I would have to quit altogether. And that's when things got really, really weird. But that's kind of for next week. But I couldn't solve it. You know, I have it or I don't. You know, it's like the strawberry. If you have an allergy to strawberry, you're not going to one day be able to magically eat a freaking strawberry. You know, I have an allergy to alcohol. I'm not going to be able to one day magically drink alcohol. It's got to go for good. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, this concept that I was in a different class of drinkers and different than the temperate drinker. You know, I bought into that early in a good way. I considered myself a pretty awesome drinker, and I was pretty aggressive about it. Anybody that was drinking with me, usually my friends, if they were suggesting it was time to call it quits, I was on them. I mean, every word came out of my mouth. I was like a meathead, just egging them on. I really thought they were doing the same thing. We were all doing the same thing. But, you know, I would even be at a 7-Eleven. You know, I've got my 18 or 24 pack in my hand. Somebody's in front of me with a 6-pack. I'm judging them about how pathetic and wimpy they are. And they can't drink. I honestly did this. To be honest with you, I still do it when somebody's in front of me and I'm buying my Diet Coke and they got a 6-pack. And I'm just like, you know, the thought of having two drinks, two glasses of wine, whatever it is, at a dinner or anything, it just disgusted me. And I would tell you, to your face, I would rather not have a drink at all than drink two. That makes no sense to me. It's stupid. This wasn't just my drinking buddies. This was, you know, out with work colleagues or entertaining people. I wanted to get drunk, and I wanted them to get drunk. Then we have this bond. Then they're like, I thought, you know, if I had somebody in town that we were trying to do business with, if I could do that, that was the key to everything. That was what would you know, crack the seal on the relationship, and we would have this bond. It was just incredible. And one interesting thing about this is a lot of those friends I hung out with that were my drinking buddies, for me, a lot of them are still my friends. And I'll be out with them or, you know, on a vacation with them, and they're not quite drinking the way I remember them drinking, which is a little bit disconcerting because it's making me question my, you know, my sense of reality. And what I'm realizing now is that they really never were like me. As disappointing as that sounds, you know, they could take it or leave it. Yeah, they could have a big night and drink till 3 a.m, but they were fine not drinking the next 2 or 3 days. I'm like, that's insane. You're on vacation. Why wouldn't you drink 40 beers a day? Chase it down with vodka. You know, the best thing about vacation was waking up and being able to drink without people judging me in the morning. In the morning. You know, so, yeah, I'm different than the temperate drinker, and I used to think that was a cool thing. And now I'm realizing that, you know, it's not so cool, and that, you know, there's a lot of people that can take it or leave it, and that just never made any sense to me. I didn't understand why anybody would drink alcohol for the taste. I really challenged you if you said that. If you were a beer connoisseur, isn't this beer? It's beer. Chug it. You know, take out your keys, poke a hole in it, crack it up, and throw it down. I mean, it, same thing with wine. You know, my boss is a wine aficionado. I'm like, why are we spending this? Why are we spending $80 on a bottle of wine at dinner? We're gonna drink 12 of them. Why are we doing this? It made no sense to me. But really, everybody else isn't thinking the same way. They're not behaving the same way. And it talks about, like Ryan alluded to, these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, problems pile up. Well, for me, you know, I was given the opportunity to make a choice by my wife. She was tired of my antics, and can't say that I blame her. She basically said, it's us or the drinking. We're out of here, or you quit drinking. And, you know, with my extremely high perception of myself and my motives, I said, fine, I'll stop drinking. Bitch, you know. I'll stop drinking. I'm bitter. I think this is ridiculous, and you're being outrageous, but I'll stop drinking. And within 24 to 48 hours, I convinced myself to make the decision to stop buying a bottle of vodka just to take a few nips to take the edge off. Because I knew when I got home, it would be chaos. The kids would be excited, but they'd be yelling. And my wife would have a bunch of questions for me. The dog wouldn't be listening. So let's just take the edge off. And that worked. But you know what? I looked at everything else in life. You know, when good things happen, people have a drink. When bad things happen, let's have a drink and think about this. I just looked at it as that. I wasn't medicating or relying upon anything else. I was doing what people do in my mind. And that's where the problems really began to pile up. I know this goes on a little bit later, but for me, the way that looked is that turned into the beginning of my dual life where everybody thought I wasn't drinking. I don't know how I got away with it. Basically, I was a maintenance drinker. You know, I had to drink so I wouldn't throw up. I had to drink so that I could go to sleep. And I got away with this for a long time. And I lived these two different lives. And everything, the problems piled up. I couldn't remember what I told you. I couldn't remember the conversation I had with my daughter before I went to bed. And trying to maintain this became very stressful and just completely out of control. But again, that goes on to part two of step one.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to read another paragraph, and it's on the same page, and it's down at the bottom of that page, and it just starts off, men and women. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
Wow, I love that paragraph. Whenever I walk into a meeting and I hear people talk about how they loved to drink, I know I am in the right spot, because by golly, I loved to drink. It was this wonderful magic experience. Like I mentioned before, I'm a little awkward, I'm a little pent up, I never quite feel right, but whew, give me a couple of drinks and a magic happens. I hear people say they got prettier, they got funnier, they got smarter, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, none of that stuff happened to me. I didn't get prettier, I didn't get smarter, I didn't get funnier. I just ceased to care about everything. And I'll tell you, it was the most freeing, wonderful experience I've ever had. I remember this one time, I'm like super pent up, anxious, and I sit down with my big old 32 ounce beer that I'm hiding from everybody, and I crack that sucker up, and I haven't even put it to my lips yet, and it's just like this magical tension went shh, you know, it was fabulous, you know, and I would get a little bit further in, just starting to feel it, that relaxation, and the lights are all smooth, and everything slows down, the mind's nice and calm, and I remember thinking to myself, if I could just walk around like this all the time, life would be great. You know, people say it all the time, alcohol was not my problem. Alcohol was my answer. It was a relief to drink. And it did seem the only normal one. You know, drinking is just what people do. At least that's what I thought. Like, everybody does it. Come home from a hard day and that's what you do, you drink. However, like John was talking about, those problems start to pile up, you know, sober up and you experience that restlessness, that irritability, that discontent, and you don't know how to get out of it by taking another, unless I take another drink. And I love this little cycle of the well-known stages of a spree. I existed in that for a long, long time. A lot of people are big on just don't drink one day at a time. I don't understand that. To be honest with you, that was my favorite method to try and quit prior to coming to AA. As a matter of fact, if that had worked for me, I would not have come to visit you people. My most favorite way, I mean, I did a lot of stuff to try to quit drinking, but my favorite way was to wake up in the morning and promise myself, you know what, I'm not going to drink today. Absolutely not going to do it. Had enough. And at some point during the day, and that kind of varied, it could be 7 a.m., I might make it till 3, who knows, but at some point, you know what, I'm just going to have a couple. Just going to have a couple to take the edge off, like John said, just going to have a couple, and of course I sit down and I have my couple, and I don't have a couple. I have a nice little spree, and then I wake up in the morning like, oh man, that sucked. You know what, I'm not going to drink today. Some point during the day, you know what, I'm going to drink today and I'm going to quit tomorrow. And I did that over and over again. I'm going to drink today and I'm going to quit tomorrow. I'm going to drink today, I'm going to quit tomorrow. I'm going to drink today, I'm going to quit tomorrow. You would be astounded at how long I believed that I was going to drink today and I'm going to quit tomorrow. And I'm not talking about a couple of weeks or a couple of months. I'm talking like years I believe this. And it was repeated over and over again. And eventually there was no hope of my recovery. You know, without this thing called an entire psychic change, I just did it over and over and over again. And I don't, who knows how to have an entire psychic change? Like, I certainly don't. Like, that's a tall order, you know? Like, what does that even mean? And without that, I was a doomed person. I mean, doomed. Drink today and quit tomorrow is my favorite method, but I tried a whole lot of other stuff, and I was very fortunate that Alcoholics Anonymous exists. because the doctors didn't know how to give me a psychic change. My husband didn't know how to give me a psychic change. My mom, who was probably one that this hurt the most, she didn't know how to give me a psychic change, and she probably would have laid down and died in order to give me one, but she didn't know how to do it. But I came to AA, and you guys did. You guys did, and that's why I love what we talk about here, which is the 12 steps, because that's how that happens. Without that, there's no doubt in my mind, there's only one of two places I would be right now, drunk or dead. So.
All right, I heard this, I don't know, somewhere in a meeting in the last few months, but it struck a chord with me, and somebody was sharing their own strength I've been experiencing and said that there's two things they're really good at, and that was thinking and drinking, and that rings so true. But again, you know, I'm skipping over the first part of this paragraph, but you come to the end here, and just like Ryan was just talking about, this is repeated over and over again, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Here it is again. This is a mental thing. I'm learning as I'm trying to delve into the program and listen to my sponsor and do these readings. Oh my God, they're telling me something is mentally wrong with me again. I don't understand this. I came here just to quit drinking. And I, like you, Ryan, I said I'll quit tomorrow for years. That does not sound absurd to me. That sounds pretty routine. And, a lot of things in life, you know, I'll quit tomorrow. You know, these sprees, I didn't want them to end. That was a problem for me. We'd go on a camping trip or hunting trip or whatever it is, and I would be so depressed when we had to come home, and you couldn't be cracking beers from, you know, I was gonna say dawn till dusk, but I never stopped at dusk. You know, it was disappointing to me, and oftentimes I'd be that guy, you know, in the car trip on the way home. It's not over until I get to the door. I'd be the only guy drinking. I'd be drinking, you know, the leftover warm beers. You know, where everybody else is driving and talking to them, you know, calling their wife, I'll be home, you know, in a few hours. And I'm like, hey, this is my time. This is my time until I hit that doorstep. So, and that would usually result in an argument and some sort of, you know, just something horrible. But I would also wake up quite often at the end of these sprees and swear, I'll never do it again. I'll never do it again. In fact, you know, this is a spiritual program, and I didn't like hearing that as well. The only relationship I had with God or our power greater than myself was just saying, God, I swear I'll never do this again. Just get me out of this jam. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I said that because I couldn't stop throwing up, because I was in trouble with work or family. So, you know, I'm used to the cycle, the constant start and stop again, the phenomenon of cravings, because when I stop, you know, it's just the clock is ticking. A matter of time when I'm going to convince myself that I need to start again.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to go onto page XXIX. XXIX. And the paragraph begins, I do not hold. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who had, for example, worked a period of months on some problem or business deal which was to be settled on a certain date favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight.
I certainly did drink to escape a lot, especially at the end. I didn't want to feel the way that I was feeling. I didn't want to deal with the things that I was dealing with. But that wasn't always the case. In this first paragraph, I didn't understand what it was saying for like the longest time. I think it took me like a year, year and a half to figure it out. But the best I can do for with that is to give you an example. I worked at a lighting company for about a year or two? I can't remember when I got fired. When I was in Texas. And we had this opportunity to go to this really fabulous lighting show in Dallas, Texas. I had gone the year before. It was this wonderful thing. We got to pick out all the stuff that was going to be in the store. I mean, you got to see things that would absolutely blow your mind. And we were going to be leaving Saturday morning, and it was going to be wonderful. And I was looking forward to it. And this girl I work with, she was going to come to my house, and she was going to pick me up. But it's Friday night, you know, no big deal. Gonna have a couple of drinks tonight, be up in the morning. We'll go on the road to this fabulous, lighting show. Everything's grand. So I sit down because I'm gonna have my two glasses of wine. Two glasses of wine did not occur. Once again, I'm sure I drank everything in the house and God only knows what else. And 8 o'clock comes around, and I don't know, this is what I'm told later on. apparently she just went to the door and was banging on it, you know, and banging on it and calling me and calling me and calling me. And of course I've drank so much and I'm passed out and I missed the entire thing. You know, I wasn't drinking all that booze because I wanted to go to that lighting show. You know, I really wanted to. When I started drinking that night before with the intention of having to, that phenomenon of craving took over, and I missed something that I was really looking forward to, you know. And that craving has ruined a lot of other things, a lot of other opportunities that I would have actually enjoyed to participate in, you know. But give me that booze, and I just lose track of everything else, any appointment or whatever, you know. It just kind of goes out the window. What was that? And then the next paragraph, that's kind of like the depressing one. The supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. I hear people talk a lot about the things that have sacrificed, and I can certainly tell you about those kinds of things. You know, there are some things I definitely gave up. There are things I think I lost because I couldn't stop drinking. But, you know, I've had a lot of opportunities to go to school. George Mason University, my parents hooked me up with an apartment in the city, like all kinds of great things. You know, I didn't stay a full semester. You know, I had better things to do. You know, that's certainly an opportunity that I sacrificed. You know, and I can give you plenty of those examples. But I think what they're talking about with the ultimate sacrifice here for me is always suicide. I mean, that's the ultimate one. You don't come back from that. And I was a person that was part of my life. You know, what do you do? Because what do you do when you're in that much pain and you don't know how to get out? You know, and you can't face it anymore. You can't fix it. You have to wake up every day to it. And then suicide starts looking like an answer. I was a person, I didn't just think about suicide. I tried to commit suicide many times. There's a guy I know. He said alcoholics usually only kill themselves when they're sober. I'm going to disagree with you. I've certainly tried to do that, but a lot of times I was drunk. And I got drunk, and I could still feel everything. I could still feel it, you know? It just wasn't going away. I'm very fortunate to survive all that, but that's what happens when people don't have a way out. That's why what we do here is so incredibly important. You know, to give that people that hope. No, you don't have to live this way. Because to be quite frank, I'd had a lot of practice when I got sober. And if this did not work for me, that I'm pretty sure I could have figured out how to succeed that time. I had a plan B and the C when I came to AA this last time. Plan B was to like move to Mexico and like stop caring, you know, because you don't want to wake up to that horror. You know, I'm just going to give me a sombrero. We're just going to live the wildlife. You know, screw any responsibility or personal connection that I have. We're just going to abandon that all. I probably would not have done that. I had a little bit of money saved up in the bank, and my full intention was to drink through all of that money and then kill myself properly that time. But I decided to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous and give this one last try because I've been going for 10 months. You know, I'm going to do it for real this time. All the stuff that you guys are talking about, we're actually going to do it. We're going to try this God stuff. We're going to try the 12 steps. And it worked. Surprise upon surprise. I did not have to make that supreme sacrifice. And I quite frequently forget how lucky I am to have found my way here and to have found the solution that you guys had offer. And it wasn't just show up at meetings. It's the stuff that we talk about here at Simple Actions and some of the other meetings that you go to around there. Not everybody is so lucky. So please, if you're here and you carry this message and you talk about the 12 steps, thank you. You saved my life.
All right. The number of missed opportunities, letdowns for myself and for others, and things I've just totally botched because of this, the phenomenon of craving took over. I can't even count them all. In fact, I've probably lied about so many of them that I don't even remember them, which is also common for me. One that comes to mind was not so long ago. It was a big deal at work. It was gonna make my whole year financially. It was gonna be great. It was gonna be great for the company, and I'd been working really hard on this. Not going out to bars at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Just spent weeks focusing on this pitch and proposal we were gonna make. Basically, we were asking these institutional fund people, these Wall Street folks, to give us like $10 million. And I had to, we were doing this whole thing in a conference room, and then we were going to take them on a roadshow tour. I had done a dry run of the roadshow tour the day before to make sure I took them through the most attractive areas getting to this property. And I mean, it was dialed in, and I was by myself the night before. I was out of town. I thought, well, might as well just, I need a good night's sleep, so let me have a few stiff drinks just so I can get to bed early. And I got wasted, like I always do, regardless of what my intentions were when I set out that night. And in the morning, I will say I did make it to the appointment, but the only reason I made it is because I fired down 2 24-ounce beers to get myself straight so I could even not shake in this meeting. And the meeting went. It was pretty unimpressive, as you could imagine. But that's just one thing in recent memory. I can't tell you how many times I, botched exams and things like that. I had it. Or where people really relied on me, whether it was at work or in school, and I wasn't able to carry, my share of the weight on whatever endeavor it was we were working on. So that happened over and over again. And I would swear I'm confident that I'm more intelligent than about 90% of the people out there, and I would never do this to myself. Why would I mess up an opportunity I know is there? I just did it over and over again, and I couldn't explain to you why. I would just feel regret in the morning. And on that last paragraph, Ryan, I'm really glad you brought that up. The concept of suicide, that was, I can't tell you how many times that went through my mind. It was just a matter of throwing in the towel. I'm tired of fighting. Now, I will say that I don't think I ever had the cojones to carry through, but I would think about it a lot. And the way I would think about it is, okay, this is the only solution. I've got to leave this place somehow. I haven't figured that out, but let me figure out what happens afterwards. I would do spreadsheet analyses of how my wife could manage the little bit of life insurance I have to take care. I actually still have that spreadsheet. Where, all right, here's how it's going to work, because I thought that, this is going to be the only solution because it's not getting any better. And to be honest with you, I came to the realization at one point, this is as good as it's ever going to get, and it was pretty bad. So the concept of suicide and throwing in that towel is not, I think it's a common thread in these rooms. I don't think I ever would have been able to carry it out, but I certainly thought about it quite a bit, and it seemed like it was one of the only options left for me at the time.
Here's the last paragraph we're going to read tonight. It's on page XXX. What? Okay. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence.
Yeah, and that's just, for me, hits the idea again that this phenomenon of craving, it's not going away. I'm never going to wake up one morning and magically be able to have a couple or magically be able to drink without consequence. It's just there for good. Never been eradicated with any, by any mean treatment. To the best of my knowledge, there's no like medical solution. They haven't come up with a pill that will allow me to drink, or a shot, or maybe some genetic therapy. it just doesn't exist. But I always get a chuckle out of this. The only relief we have to suggest is an entire abstinence. Ha ha ha, thanks for that suggestion. gee, I hadn't thought of that one. That's another thing, another saying in A that always made me mad. I remember being like, I used to show up at meetings drunk, being drunk one time. And they're like, don't drink and you won't get drunk. Thanks. Would you like to tell me how to not drink now? Because I can't figure that one out. You know, that was the big mystery. Like, how do you not drink? How do you not drink? How do you not drink? And you know, when I read this, I have to remember this is a doctor writing it. I mean, this is what the doctor is telling you to do. Stop drinking. I think all of us fellow alcoholics here, we know that it's a little bit more complicated than that, the treatment of alcoholism. I do have to get this idea that I'm going to be able to safely drink one day out of my head. That's the delusion that's got to be smashed in the first step. And that's a tough one to get out of your mind, especially when you like to drink as much as I did. As a matter of fact, my definition of alcohol abuse used to have nothing to do with alcoholism. It used to be like if you spilled your beer on the carpet, because you ain't getting that back. So this idea that I'm never going to be able to drink again, it's a tough one to swallow, but it's absolutely necessary for me to know that to get well. You know, it's my starting point. If I still have that idea, I'm probably going to try it again one day, as I did.
Yeah, I can tell you that when I finally came to these rooms, and as I mentioned previously, all other options were exhausted. There were no other options. I came here ready to admit that I can't ever drink again. I mean, and I firmly, firmly believe that. But what's amazing to me, and it, you know, this is, goes back to that psychic change and the things that go through our heads, is I can't sit here and tell you that on a more frequent basis than I'd like to admit, I feel like, you know, I haven't had a drink in over a year. You know, I've done the steps. Sometimes I'll have that fleeting moment thought that maybe I could drink. Maybe I, you know, was camping this weekend with my family. Now, a beer right now under the stars would be great. You know, I used to do that. Well, why couldn't I? It's amazing to me. It's this cycle that we're talking about. It's this phenomenon of craving. It's all of it wrapped up together. Abstinence is not just this idea I came in here with. It's something I've got to constantly remind myself of and work at, regardless of how much I think I got it or how good I'm feeling or how great life is going. You know, I'm a moment away from a drink, and if I'm not doing this, if I'm not doing what you guys are telling me to do, if I'm not engaged in talking with my sponsor and talking to other alcoholics and doing these steps, then abstinence is just it's a theory, it's a thought, you know, for me. I'm just think about how many times I promised myself I just can't drink anymore. Obviously, you know, all these horrible things happen every time I drink. I just can't do it anymore. There's the thought of abstinence for you, or at least for me. So I've got to come in here. I've got to practice this, whether I like to, whether I want to or not. And I can't say that I always like it, but I have started to realize lately, doing the things I don't like to do tend to work out better for me. And they cause less pain by doing them quickly and swiftly. You know, all I can say for me is, you know, like Ryan said, thank God for this program and for all of you. And especially for those of you that talk about the steps and alcoholism when we're in meetings, because if I hadn't come in here and been able to identify immediately, I'd still be out there. And, you know, my wife might be using that spreadsheet at this point, because I don't think I would have lasted this long. So thanks for having me speak.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, guys. Okay, that's it. We're done. So thanks to the people that spoke. And I'm going to pass this basket. This is the seventh tradition basket. And thank you. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup in central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. I'll ask at this point, while the basket's going round, are there any AA-related announcements? Yes.
My name's Kathy, and I'm
Hi, Kathy.
And we do lunch after the meeting, so we have a meeting on night from 10:30 to 11:30, and then lunch after. So please come out and join us. It's a great time.
Crystal.
Crystal Alcoholic.
Hi, Crystal.
Hey, Crystal.
After the magic that happens here on the 26th of October,
Thanks.
I'm going to make this announcement, and we've got some flyers. They're up at the back. They're everywhere. We printed 1,500 of them, so you know, you should be able to get one. So we're doing this thing. It's on Friday, October the 25th, which is quite soon, and it's also on Saturday, October the 26th, and it's not here. And I won't go into the reason why it's not here, but it's not here. It's at Ghent United Methodist Church, which is near here. And basically, this guy's coming in from out of town, and he's going to blow everybody's socks off. He's speaking at 7 o'clock on Friday night, and then on Saturday, there's a series of workshops, potluck lunch. It's completely free. Just come along if you want. If you don't, oh well. And it's, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really good, really positive weekend. And if you can't come on Friday, come on Saturday. If you can't come on Saturday, come on Friday. And there's flyers there. Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise one of your hands. Newcomers, is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you. Darren.
Hey, Darren.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else? Okay. There is literature available. It's on the back table beside the water and the coffee. If you want the literature, see any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Closing. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at this wonderful boutique Mexican restaurant. And, you know, when I got sober, I didn't have any friends. I know you'll find that impossible to believe. I really didn't. And the idea of a whole night without drinking, especially, you know, was just horrifying. And what happened when I got sober, after the meeting, these people would be like, Graham, we're going out for coffee, why don't you come? Or we're going out for dinner, you want to come? And I went along with them. And I firmly believe that saved my bacon, was people in AA willing to give a little time and just to sit down. Sometimes it's kind of awkward, a bit uncomfortable, and it's like, awkward. But but it was great because it got me out of myself. And I think what alcoholism wants me doing is sitting at home on my own, the phone unplugged, the lights out and the TV off. Maybe that's just in my house. Anyway, so if you don't want to come out for dinner, whatever. Enjoy yourself alone at home. Anyway, and someone's volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks for reading. For those that care to join us, we're going to form a circle and read the Lord and say the Lord's Prayer.
Good job.